We're on Lamed Ches, Amid Aleph, the top line, last word on the line, where it says, Amar, then Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak, Amar Rav. The Mishnah taught us that there is a rabbinic prohibition on food that was cooked by idolaters. Even if we know all of the ingredients in that food is kosher, still the Rabbanan decreed that food is prohibited. Rashi mentioned two different reasons for this decree. One was to prevent intermarriage. And the other reason was that even if in this particular case the food is kosher, if a Jew grows accustomed to having food cooked by idolaters, that may lead him to eat foods that are really not kosher. This prohibition is more commonly known as bishalakim. The Gemara today will teach us a few limitations on this prohibition of bishalakim. The Gemara begins, Amar Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak Amar Rav. He said, Kol hanechal kamos shehu chai. Anything that is eaten in its raw state, it's perfectly edible without cooking it. And an idolater, or for the purpose of this halacha, even if he's not an idol-worshipping person, a non-Jew, could make something bishalakim. But this food that could have been eaten raw just fine, and the non-Jew goes ahead and cooks it, ein bo mishum bishuli of the kochavim. There's no prohibition here of bishalakim. For the halacha views that cooking as inconsequential, the cooking wasn't needed, and so for the purpose of the halacha bishalakim, it's not called a cooking, and therefore the food remains permitted. The Gemara notes that Besura Masnuhachi, in Sura they taught it as we just did, but in Pumbedisa Masnuhachi. Over in Pumbedisa they taught a different version that goes like this. Amar of Shmuel bar of Yitzchak Amar Rav, Kol she'eino nechal al shulchan melachim lelapis bo'as hapas. Any food that would not be fit for a king's table to serve as a condiment for the bread. Point is that it's not a chashiv kind of food, it's not an important type of food that would be served at a king's table or meaning for any like important person. Ein bo mishum bishuli of the kochavim. In such a case, the rabbanon never decreed a prohibition of bishalakim. The fact that it was cooked by an idolater will not make it prohibited in a case where it's not a chashiv food, it's not something that a person would serve to important guests. The Gemara explains, might be nice, what's the difference between these versions, practically? The Gemara says, well, for example, like a Beinayu, there'd be a difference between the versions as regards dogim kitanim, small fish, or the arde mushrooms, or the daisa, or a cereal like made from grits. But these are things that, on the one hand, you can't eat it raw, you need that cooking, so according to version 1, there would be no basis to be lenient. But on the other hand, you wouldn't serve these things on a king's table either. Therefore, according to version 2, even if an idolater cooked them, they would be permitted. And Allah actually paskins like both of these versions. It's possible that the second version was merely adding the point made in the first version. And so practically speaking, the food will not be subject to bishalakim unless the cooking is actually needed. It couldn't have been eaten in a raw state, and it's something that would be served on a king's table, be served to an important person. Without those two things, the food will not be subject to the prohibition of bishalakim. There's also a factor that we mentioned yesterday that has to be that the cooking made a significant change in the food that occurred through the process of cooking. The Gemara now says, Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav, says, Dagim ketanim meluchim main by mishum mishuli ovdei kochavim. Small salted fish are not subject to the prohibition of bishalakim. So it appears that Rav Asi is assuming specifically like version 1, that the only basis to be lenient would be if the food in question is perfectly fine in a raw state, which is not the case by these small fish. So, you know, starting out, the fish would be subject to bishalakim. Let's say a Jew came along and salted the small fish. Says Rav Asi, in the name of Rav, this process of salting the small fish makes them edible. Therefore, should an idolater, a non-Jew, afterwards go ahead and, let's say, cook or roast that those small fish, it would not make them prohibited because they're already edible. Therefore, this is deemed an inconsequential cooking, so they would remain permitted. At the same time, says the Gemara now, Rav Yosef said, although the above is true, im tzala novi kochavim, if the idolater went ahead and roasted these small fish, somech Yisrael alei mishum eruvei tafshilin, a Jew would be allowed to rely on the small fish, use them as his eruv tafshilin. So this refers to the rabbinic enactment that applies when Yom Tov falls out right before Shabbos, where the halach is we're allowed to cook on Yom Tov for the upcoming Shabbos. But we must, you know, make a sign to remind us that if the next day were not Shabbos, we would not be allowed to cook on Yom Tov for the next day. Therefore, the Rabbanan enacted that before Yom Tov, we should prepare a cooked item, like to say that we already started to cook for Shabbos before Yom Tov started, and so this will serve as a reminder. And so we have this requirement to set aside a cooked item for the Erev Tevshilin. Says Rav Yosef, these small fish that had been previously salted and then the idolater came along and roasted them could be used for Erev Tevshilin because, first of all, they didn't become prohibited, as explained above. It's not a case of Bishalakim because the Jews salting them already made them edible. So from the vantage point of the laws of Bishalakim, that step of the idolater going ahead and roasting these small fish is inconsequential. It's not considered an act of cooking. However, from the vantage point of the laws of Erev Tevshilin, we do view the small fish as a cooked item. The fact is, they were cooked, they were roasted, and so it's perfectly acceptable to be used for Erev Tevshilin. However, Rav Yosef says, V'yavdinu avikuchavim kasa dar sana, if this idolater prepared the fish as kasa dar sana, which means that he fried the fish in a sauce that is made of fish fat and flour, then says Rav Yosef, Usser, the finished product is going to be unfit for use as Erev Tevshilin because here we do have a Bishalakim problem. The reason is because clearly the flour in the Kasa de Hasana dish that he prepared is something that requires cooking. It can't be eaten raw. So when the idolater went to cook that, so that's a prohibition of Bishalakim. So now that this dish is prohibited because of Bishalakim, you can't use it as Erev Tevshilin. The Erev Tevshilin has to be a permitted for consumption. And the Gemara now wonders, Pshita, seemingly this is obvious. Of course, if the Vikachavim prepared Kasa Dar Sana, which has flour in it, that is an issue of Bishalakim, because obviously flour can't be eaten raw. So why did he even have to teach this? The Gemara answers, it's not so obvious. For Mahu the Seima, without this teaching, you might have said, we say harsana ikar. Maybe the halacha views the fish fat component as the primary component. The flour is just like a side ingredient. And therefore, since the fish fat does not have to be fried, doesn't have to be cooked, it can be eaten raw, we therefore do not have a problem of bishalakum. So Kamash Milan, Rav Yosef comes to teach us that in reality, kimcha ikar. As far as this sauce of the kasa dar sana dish, the halacha defines the flour as the main ingredient, and therefore, since the flour is certainly needed to be cooked, to be edible, therefore, since an idolater cooked it here, it's prohibited. Mark continues with another ruling, Amarav Baruna Amarav, Ovid Kochavim Sheitzise Sa'ur Ba'agam. That's an idolater, lit an area, this field, this meadow on fire, it scorched the field, killing many grasshoppers, Kolachagavim Sheba'agam Asurin. All of the grasshoppers burned in the fire are prohibited. One cannot eat it. We know the Torah permits certain types of grasshoppers. And what's more, there's no specific manner that it has to be killed. It says, Rav, in this case, all of the grasshoppers are not kosher. We cannot eat any of them. The Gemara probes this ruling. Hey, Chidami, what exactly is the case here? Ilema de lo yada haitar ve'aitame. If we're talking about a case where we can't tell which species is the kosher type or not, that we find in this burned field, well then, why do you have to make it a case where an idolater, a non-Jew, lit the fire? Feel Yisrael Nami. Same halach would apply if a Jew lit the fire. If you're not sure if the grasshopper in question is of the kosher species, well then of course you can't eat it. On the other hand, the Gemara says, Ela mishum bishuli of the kochavim, so rather you'll say, no, this is a halacha that's specific to an idolater, because we're talking about where we know all of the grasshoppers were from the kosher species. The issue is that an idolater lit the fire, so it's a problem of bishalakum. The grasshoppers were cooked by an ovek hachavim. That's why they're not allowed to be eaten, based on the rabbinic decree against bishalakum. But the Gemara objects to this, ke gavna miyasir. But in this kind of case, is there indeed a prohibition of bishalakum? Gemara points out, I vehom Rav Chana Barami Rabbi Pidasam Rabbi Yochanan said the following: Hi Ovid Kachavim the Charich Reisha. If an idolater burned off the hair of the head of an animal that was shechted, Shari Lamecha Mine Afilu Me Reish Une. It's permitted for Yisrael, obviously provided that the animal received the proper ritual shechita. He can eat the head of the animal even from the ears where it's soft, and so surely was burned by the fire. Nevertheless, the Jew can eat it, and there's no issue here of bishalakum. So what do we see from this teaching? Alma levuri seir kamachavin. We see that in a case like this, we say he wasn't burning the animal's head to cook it, but his intention was simply to remove its hair. And therefore, it's not bishalakum. So, hachanami legaluye agma kamechavion. This principle should apply in our case as well. It is that this adulter didn't light the field on fire to go and cook the grasshoppers. He just wanted to, light this ground on fire. He went to uncover the ground. He wasn't here to roast grasshoppers. And so, it's not a problem of bishalakum. It's only bishalakum when the adulter, the non-Jew, had intention to go ahead and cook this thing. So, how do we understand the ruling? Gemara answers, Liolam de lo yada haitar vaitame. Really, the situation here is, as was originally suggested, that we're simply not sure of these burned grasshoppers, which one is kosher or not. We can't tell if it's from the kosher species, and therefore none of them could be eaten. If that's the case, why is it specific to when an idolater burned this agam? The Gemara says, "Umaisa shahaya bovigochav mayim." It's simply what happened. This was an actual case. The case happened to involve an idolater who lit the field on fire, but you're right, it wouldn't make a difference. Even if a Jew did, you wouldn't be able to eat the grasshoppers either way, because we can't tell if it's from the kosher species. So it turns out the ruling has nothing to do with the halacha of bishalakum. Where further studies the ruling that was quoted, Gufa, let's see the text itself again, which was, Amrav Chanan bar Ami, Amravi Pidas, Amravi Yochanan. But again, Hai Ovi Kochavim, the Charech Resha. If an idolater went and burned the animal's head after it was shechted to burn off the hair, Shari Lamecho Min Afilim Reshune, that you can eat the animal's head, and it's not a problem of Bishalakum. For the reason we said, the Bishalakum only applies if the idolater's intention was to cook this food. The Gemara applies this to a different situation. Amravina Ravina said, Hilkach, therefore, in light of this teaching, Hai Ovid Kochavim, the Shadda Six Ala Tuna, an idolater, were to take a peg, a wooden peg, that he wants to dry, and he throws it in the oven to dry it out. And the cover by Yisrael, Karame Kara. Meanwhile, earlier, Yisrael, the Jew, had placed, let's say, a gourd, a raw gourd, inside of that oven, which was then fired up by the non-Jew to dry out his peg. And in the course of that, it cooked, it roasted the gourd. Says Ravina, based on the above, Shapir Dami, the gourd would be perfectly fine. There'd be no issue of Bishalakum, because the adulterer wasn't trying to cook the gourd. He had no idea the gourd was there. So being that there was no intention to cook, therefore the gourd remains perfectly permissible. Gemara wonders, Pshita, seemingly this is very obvious, this is like a straightforward application of the principle that we learned above, so why did Ravina feel the need to state this application? The Gemara answers, for if Ravina didn't tell us this, Ma would the same malivishuli manaka mechavya. You might have said, no, the adulterer's intention was to cook here. To cook what? To cook the peg? This utensil. So you could argue that was a form of cooking. So along with his intention to cook the peg, he also cooked something else, this gourd. So the gourd then was in a situation where it was cooked by an idolater who had intention to cook. That's what you might have said. Therefore, Kamash Malan, Vina comes to teach us. In fact, the halacha does not view the Ovid Kochavim's intention here as an intention to cook. Rather, l'shurure manaka mechavin. The Ovid Kochavim's goal was to simply strengthen this utensil. It had moisture in there, he wanted to dry it out. And so from the vantage point of the laws of Bishalakum, this is not viewed as an act of Bishal. Rather, the definition of Bishal of halachic cooking, when you're talking about the laws of Bishalakum, means a person who is cooking food. So if the Ovid Kochavim was cooking something else, there's some other food, and the Jew had his gourd there from before, then indeed the gourd would be prohibited, it would be Bishalakum. But since here we're talking about a utensil, not something that's going to be eaten, that's not called a bishul, and therefore the gourd that was in there does not become prohibited under bishulakum. The Gemara issues another ruling. I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Shmuel. Finiach Yisrael baser al gami gachalam. Let's say a Jew puts a meat on coals, ubo v'kachavim v'hafach bo, and then an idolater came along and took over, and he turned over the meat on the coals. Says Rav Yehuda Shmuel, mutter. The meat remains permitted. It's fine. It's not an issue here of bishalakum. So the Gemara wonders about the circumstances here. Echidami. What exactly is the case here? Ilema de ilohafach behave bashil. The situation is such that even had the idolater not turned over the meat, it would have cooked anyways. Well, then, pshita. Obviously, then, it's not a problem of bishalakum, because the Avi Kochavim's act didn't really contribute anything to the cooking. So, of course, that's viewed as not significant, inconsequential, and therefore the meat is fine. And so, Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel wouldn't even have to tell us such a halacha. The Gemara says, Elalav, it must be, we're talking about a situation where the lo hafach lo avi bashil. We know the Yavik Chavim's act was integral to the cooking process. Had he not turned over the meat, it would never have cooked. Like, let's say the coals were about to go out. So they'll come quickly, you know, turned over, so it got cooked on the other side. And so his act was integral to the cooking. But the Gemara says, if that's the case, am I mutter? Well, now we have the opposite problem, which is, if so, why would the meat be permitted? Why isn't it a problem of bishulakam? I bishulish levig chavim ninu. This would appear to be a situation where food was cooked by an avig chavim. He played an integral role in the cooking. So it should be a problem of bishulakam. Davina Mershmul's ruling appears to be either too obvious or wrong. The Gemara answers, lo tzricha, no. Rav Shmuel's ruling is needed in the following situation. Here's the case. The Elohafa Chavibashal Betarti Shai. There's definitely a case where, either way, even if the Avig Chavim didn't turn over the meat, it would have eventually cooked. But if the Avig Chavim did not turn the meat over, it would have taken much longer. It would have taken, let's say, 2 hours. Vihashta Kabashal Bechad the Shaita. By the Avig Chavim turning it over, it expedited the process. He helped, like, distribute the heat. So now it's going to take half the time. Let's say 1 hour now. So in this situation, ma'u desema, karuve bishula milsahi. You might have said that this point is halachically significant. Look, he clearly contributed something important here. He made it cook faster. And so this maybe should be a problem of bishulakum. So kamash malan, Shmuel teaches us otherwise. He says, not true. Even though, like, physically in the cooking process, what the Avig Chavim did was significant, but still, it's not the way it works. Rather, this halacha bishalakum says that if the meat would have anyways eventually been cooked through the Yisrael's initial act, then it's not deemed a situation of bishalakum. As will become evident later, and basically the way it works is, as long as a Jew played what's halachically defined as a critical role in the cooking process, and the fact that the Ovid Kochavim also contributed will not make it a situation of bishalakum. However, the Gemara questions this from a statement of Rabbi Yochanan, v'ho'am Rabbi Yassi, Rabbi Yochanan. What about the following statement of Rabbi Yassi in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, where he said that kol shehu kemachol ben drusai, if you have a food that was cooked by a Jew to the point of kemachol ben drusai, which is the halacha's way of referring to something that was very minimally cooked, only 1/3 of the amount that foods are normally cooked for. For Ben Drusai was a criminal, is a person always on the run. So he didn't have time to sit there waiting for it to cook all the way. So he would cook it only 1/3. So this is the measure that's used in halacha to talk about a case where something is, you know, minimally, you know, the bare minimum of being cooked. So says Rabbi Yochanan, if a Yisrael, if a Jew cooked the food to this point of Kemachol Ben Drusai, and then it Ovi Kochavim took over, Ein Bo Mishum Bishuli Avdo Kochavim. It wouldn't be a problem in this case of Bishulakum, because, you know, technically the food was already cooked, it had a minimal cooking by the Yisrael, and so the Ovi Kochavim's act would not be deemed significant to cooking to make the food prohibited. Gemara points out that Rabbi Yochanan's statement here implies that ha einu kemachol ben drusai. But if the Yisrael did not cook the food to that point, he only cooked it for a little bit, he cooked it even less than 1/3, and then an idolater non-Jew took over, he, you know, cooked it the rest of the way. Yesh bo mishum bishuli avdei kochavim. In this case, Rabbi Yochanan implies that there would be a problem of bishulakum. So this seems to contradict what Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel indicated, that again, the way it works is, as long as, you know, the Jew started the process, or eventually at some point it got cooked, doesn't matter if the Avig Chavim takes over, which implies that even if he takes over right away, it would not be a problem. So it seems at odds with this statement of Rabbi Yochanan. But the Gemara answers, so really there's no contradiction at all. For hasam kigon de osve besilsa v'shakli Avig Chavim yosve betanura. The Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan is referring to a situation where this Yisrael cooked it for a little bit and then took it off the fire, put it in a basket, and then later the Avig Chavim took that meat and put it in the oven to resume the cooking, to cook it all the way. In this situation, Rabbi Yochanan says that unless the Jew had already cooked it at least the minimal amount of kemachol ben drusai, it's going to be bishalakum. Because in this situation, the Jew's act of initially cooking it already is over. And what the Ovek HaChavim is now doing is disconnected from that. This is like a new act of cooking for this food. And so Rabbi Yochanan is saying, unless it was, you know, technically already cooked, it's going to become Bishalakim. But where it's one continuous thing, where the Jew started even for a little bit, and the Ovek HaChavim takes over, then as Rabbi Yehuda Shmuel said, it's not a problem. It would not be deemed Bishalakim. And the Gemara supports this from a Braisa Tanyam Yachi, and so it says, in a Braisa, says the Braisa, Miniach Yisrael Basar Al Gabi Gechalim, Yisrael can put his meat on the coals, Uba Ovek HaChavim Mehapich Bo, and then a non-Jew, an idolater, can take over, he can turn it over. Achiyovi Yisrael mi beis haknesses, mi beis medrash. And he leave the Ovek HaChavim, turning over, cooking the meat, while the Yisrael goes off to Shol, or to the beis medrash. V'yenei choshesh, and he need not be concerned, that's fine, because he started that cooking process. Similarly, shefeses, isha kedera agabe kira. A Jewish woman could put a pot of food in the oven, she could start the cooking by putting the pot on the oven, and then a non-Jewish woman could take over, turning to Amid Beza Megis, and she can then stir at Shetavim, Mibesa Merchatz, Mibesa Knesses. Well, the Jewish woman could go out either to the bathhouse or to the shul, and she need not to worry about a problem of Bishal Akum, the fact that an Akum continued the cooking process, that is not an issue. Since she started that process, it's called Bishal Yisrael, not Bishal Akum. Gemara now asks the following question. Ibailo, they asked, if Hiniach Ovek HaChavim, let's say it's the other way, that the Ovek HaChavim started the process, and then V'Hafach Yisrael Mao. And what is the halacha if the Yisrael then took over and started turning over the meat on those coals? What would the halacha be here? Amar of Nachman bar Yitzchak, he said, Kavachomer. He said, well, based on what we learned earlier, we can make a Kavachomer argument that certainly this case is fine. It is, if we said above that Gemara biyad Ovek HaChavim mutter, even where the Ovek HaChavim is completing the process, which is really the more significant part, and yet we said above that as long as the Yisrael started the process, it's fine, it's not deemed Bishal Akum. Well, then Gemara biyad Yisrael l'kol shekein. Well, then in a case where the Yisrael finished the process, certainly it's fine, certainly that is deemed Bishal Yisrael, not Bishal Akum. And the Gemara states that indeed this is the Halacha Itmar Nami, and so it was stated, Amar Rabba Bar Barchon, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, V'yamri Lar Samse, Amar Rav Acha, Bar Barchon, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. He said that the Halacha is, Bein She'niach Ovek HaChavim V'Hafach Yisrael, Bein She'niach Yisrael V'Hafach Ovek HaChavim, where the Yisrael did the later part, was involved in the later stage, turning over the meat on the coals, or whether he simply started the process, he put the meat on the coals. In either case, mutter, the food will be permitted. It's not a problem. Bishalakim ve'eino aser achidei tchilaso ugemara biyad Ovek HaChavim will only be Bishalakim if the akum, this Ovek HaChavim, did both the beginning and the end. If the Yisrael did not significantly contribute at all, then it's a case of Bishal Akum. Gemara discusses a similar kind of leniency with respect to the prohibition of Pas Akum. It is the rabbinic enactment that prohibits the consumption of bread that was baked by idolaters. So Amar Rav Yiravina said, Hilchas the halacha is, Hai rifta the shagar Ovek HaChavim v'yafa Yisrael. Regarding bread, where Ovek HaChavim started the process, he fired up the oven. But then the Yisrael did the actual baking. He put the dough into the oven. Yidami or shagar Yisrael v'yafa Ovek HaChavim. So the Yisrael fired up the oven, even though the Ovek HaChavim then put the dough into the oven. Inami shagar Ovek HaChavim v'yafa Ovek HaChavim. Even if in Ovek HaChavim both fired up the oven and put the dough in the oven, v'yasi Yisrael v'chasa ba chitui. But the Yisrael came along while the bread was baking and stirred the coals, shapir dami. All these cases, the bread would be perfectly fine. Because in all these cases, the Yisrael made some significant contribution to that baking process, and therefore it's no longer deemed pas vakum. It's fine, it's pas Yisrael. The Gemara now discusses, as far as this halacha of Bishal Akum, what about Dag Maliach? What if in Ovek HaChavim salted some fish? Would that the fish be considered a Bishal Akum? So we have a dispute about this. Chizkiah Shari. Chizkiah says, no, it's permitted. He says salting is not tantamount to cooking in this context, therefore it's permitted, it's not Bishal Akum. Rabbi Yochanan Asar. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, salting here equals cooking, so it is Bishal Akum. Another case, Beit Zetzluya, roasted egg. There's also a dispute about this. The opinions are Bar Kapara Shari. Bar Kapara says, even though, you know, clearly the act was an act of cooking. He roasted it, but since what's being cooked is hidden on the inside, the Ovikacham doesn't come to direct contact with it. Therefore, this is out of the scope of the rabbinic enactment of Bishalakim, so it's permitted. Rabbi Yochanan Nasser, Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with this theory, and he says, no, this is like any other case of Bishalakim, it's prohibited. The Gemara says, Kiyasa Rav Dimi, and Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he presented it like this, Echad Dag Maliach, V'Echad Beitzat Tzeluya, both the salted fish and roasted egg. On those two cases, we have these opinions, Chizkiah Ubar Kapara Sharu, they permit both of these, Rabbi Yochanan Asar. Rabbi Yochanan prohibits both of these items. The Gemara relates a story where this halacha came up. And once Rabbi Chia Parva, Ikla Lebei Reish Galusa, Rabbi Chia Parva was once by the Reish Galusa, which was a powerful Jewish family that had a lot of political power. They were recognized by the government, but as we'll see, sometimes the people in Reish Galusa were not exactly upstanding people. Amrulei, and they asked Rav Chia Parva a question, a shayla, Beitzat Tzeluya Mai. They asked about the case we just discussed, that what's the halacha if an akum roasted an egg? Is that prohibited? Amrulehu said to them, told them what we learned above, that Chizkiah Bar Kapara showed Rabbi Yochanan Nasser, it's a dispute between Chizkiah and Bar Kapara on one side who permitted, and Rabbi Yochanan on the other side who says it's prohibited. Rav Chia Parva and weighed in, he said, well, vein dvarav shalacha b'makom shnayim. It's two against one, and therefore, the practical halacha here should be that it's permitted. However, Amar Lehu Rav Zvid interjected, he said, lo tetzitzulei. Do not listen to what Rav Chia Parva is saying. For Hachim Rabbi Abaye said, hilchasok avusei de Rabbi Yochanan. Abaye clearly ruled that the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan, that an egg roasted by an avi kochavim is prohibited. The Gemara says, the people there at Reish Galusa were not happy at all with the Rav Zvid, intervening here and being stringent for them. And so, Ashkiyua Nagota de Chalav and Nach Nafshe. They gave him this vinegar, presumably with like some poison in there to drink, and he died. They killed Rav Zvid for this. So clearly, this was not a person of a sterling character. He basically murdered Rav Zvid in cold blood. Gemara continues with the Braisa that discusses the laws of Bishalakum. Tan Rabbanan, the Rabbanan Tan Braisa, that as far as Kafrisin, the husks that cover the caper berries, via Kaflutos, leeks, via Hemtalia, which will be identified later by the Gemara, via Chamin, hot water cooked by idolaters. So here Rashi mentions the point we saw yesterday that the source of heat, the cooking, doesn't really fundamentally change the water. That's why it's not subject to Bishalakum. The previous items are eaten raw, therefore they're not subject to Bishalakum. Makloyas, grains, let's say, that are parched, so again, the fire doesn't fundamentally alter the grains, so they're not subject either to Bishalakum. Says the Braisa, therefore, Shilahen. Any of these things that was prepared by them, by idolaters, mutarin, they're still permitted for the reasons we explained. The Braisa continues, it baits at Saluya Asura, the Braisa rules that a roasted egg of an idolater is prohibited. So the Braisa is coming down like that view. As far as shemen, oil of idolaters, even though our Mishnah mentioned that a prohibition against oil of idolaters, but Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, Beisdino, Nimnu Alavi, Tiru, as we saw, and previously, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi and his court permitted oil of idolaters. They ruled they're not like the decree. When now brings a Braisa that identifies the Hemtalia that was mentioned here, Tanya, Braisa says that he Hemtalia, he Psilia, he Shiasa. It's the same as Psilia, which is the same as Shiasa. So the Gemara asks, my Shiasa, what's Shiasa? So the Gemara describes, Amar Rabba Bar Rechanan, Rabbi Yochanan. It says, it's been 40 years since the following story happened. He says, it happened 60 years ago. The Gemara says, they're not arguing. Rather, it's simply mar bishne. They're reporting the following incident at different times, with Rabba Bar Rechana reporting it 20 years after Rabbi Yochanan had reported it. This was what they described. Maisu Bizra de Karpisa. It once happened that they brought some, first of all, seed from cress, Ubizra de Chitana, and flax seed, Ubizra de Shavililta, and some fenugreek seed. They took these seeds, Vitarlu Bade Adadi Vishuri, mixed them together in like lukewarm water, Vishavkulea de Makbal. They left it in there until the seeds started to sprout, they started to grow. And then, Maisi Chatz Vichadati, they brought new barrels, imalu maya, which they filled with water, v'taru b'hu gargishta, they put some clay in there, madbikin bay. The seeds went to the clay, v'aylan lebei bani, they brought this to the bathhouse, nafku melav levi, the time the people came out of the bathhouse, shoots had already started to grow from this clay, so it grew like supernaturally fast, v'achli minayim. And the people coming out of the bathhouse, they're all like heated up, ate from it. Vikarimi binta de rishayuwa tufar de karayu. And it cooled them from the hair on their heads to the toenails on their feet. Amar Vashi Vashi said about this story. Reportedly occurred, Amarli Rabbi Chanina Milan. Chanina told me, said about this story, that Milan, it's just words. It's not true. It couldn't have happened. These plants couldn't have grown so fast. Vamri La, some say, in a different version, Vashi said that Rabbi Chanina said to him, Be Milan. Surely this could only have been accomplished with words, that is, with some kind of magic spell. That's the only thing that could have made this possible. They used the kishav, they used some kind of sorcery to make this happen. Gemara continues with a braisa. Tana Rabbanan, the Rabbanan Tana braisa, that as far as a kuspa and shalov de kachavim, the refuse, leftover dates after they made date beer, of idolaters, shucham ucham and biyara gedola, if they prepared this, if they took the leftover dates, and boiled it up in a very large pot, then aser, miyorakitana mutter. But if in a very small pot, then it's not a problem, it remains permitted. The reason that in a large pot it is a problem is because of the assumption that the adulterer had cooked something not kosher in the pot previously. Now the flavors are going to get into the leftover from the dates that are being cooked up in the pot. But if it's a really small one, then as we'll see, the assumption is it was just too small to fit something, not kosher, and there's some kind of non-kosher meat, let's say, and therefore, you don't have a problem in that case. The Gemara clarifies, Ve'ezewi yorva ketana. What is the definition here of a small pot? Amar Biyanai. Biyanai said, Kol she'ein tzipur d'ror yachali kones b'socha. If it's so small that the idolater couldn't even fit a little bird called the d'ror bird. In this case, presumably, he wasn't able to fit anything not kosher in the pot, and therefore, we're not concerned in that case, that the not kosher flavors will then get into the date mixture that's being boiled up. But the Gemara asks on this, even if you can't fit even a small not kosher animal, v'dilma d'muyeh d'muah v'ailua, maybe the adulter simply cut it up, and that way fit it into this small pot and cook this not kosher thing in there. So the Gemara modifies, l'kol she'ein rosh tzibur d'ror yachali kanes b'socha. Where it says, you're right, the pot would have to be even smaller, so small, that he would not be able to even fit the head of a d'ror bird. Then indeed it's too small, presumably, to fit anything that's not kosher, some not kosher flesh. And therefore the date leftovers that are boiled up would be fine. You don't have to worry about not kosher flavors getting in there. But the Gemara now questions the above braisa. Seems to contradict a different braisa. V'atanya, it says in another braisa, that achas yor gedolav, achas yor ketana, mutter. It says even if it was a large pot, it's fine. If the adulter then boiled up this leftovers from the dates, it's kosher, there's no issue. So the braisas appear to contradict each other. The Gemara answers lokasha. Really, it's not a problem. For ha k'man d'yamer no sein tam l'fagam aser. First braisa we learned assumes like the opinion that even when the non-kosher flavor in question is imparting a pagam kind of taste, it's not a good taste, it's a bad taste, which is presumably the situation here. Presumably, the pot wasn't just used. It was probably used yesterday. So by this time, the flavors in the pot are rancid. They're not going to impart a positive taste. And yet, the opinion of the first price is that, nevertheless, it's a non-kosher flavor. It's going to get into whatever you're cooking in the pot. And therefore, it would render the contents in the pot as not kosher. Whereas, ha, command the yomer, no, sein tam l'fagam, mutter. Price number two holds, when the flavors in the walls of the pot are imparting a detrimental kind of flavor, it's not adding in a positive way to the food in the pot, and that does not make the food in the pot that you're cooking not kosher. Hence, the second price has said that even if you're talking about a large pot, it's not a problem. Again, we're assuming that the pot it wasn't used very recently, so whatever flavors are in there are not going to taste good at all, and therefore does not create any problem. The Gemara brings a ruling from Rav Sheshes. Some Rav Sheshes, said, Hai mishcha shalika de armai aser. Boiled oil of Arameans, so in other words, if adulterers cooked some oil, even though we learned that the Nisiya rescinded the general enactment against the oil of idolaters, however, if they cooked the oil, then it's prohibited. However, the Gemara rejects this. Amar Rav Safra, Safra said, "Lamai nechush lo." But what is there to be concerned about here, about this oil that was boiled up by a non-Jew? Imishum eruvi. If your concern is that it's adulter when it poured some not kosher wine into the oil, that's not a concern for Mr. Sari. He surely would not do that, for it would cause the oil to spoil. Imishum bishuli of the kachavim. And if you're saying the oil is prohibited because it's a food that was cooked by an idolater, it's bishalakum, but that doesn't apply here either. For nechalukim oshuchai, since oil could be eaten even when it's raw, therefore, as we said earlier, bishalakum doesn't apply in such a case. And imishum giuli of the kachavim, if you're saying there's a problem here of kashrus, that non-kosher flavors from the pot they're boiling the oil in are going to get into the oil, but that isn't a problem either. For nosin tam levgam hu umotur. This is a situation where presumably it wasn't used today, so it's already from yesterday, so the flavor in there is not good at all. It's lefkam, it's only negative. And he says the halacha is such a flavor will not make the food that's being cooked in there now not kosher. So if Safra concludes that is not true, the fact that idolaters cooked oil, even in their pot, wouldn't make it not kosher. We're now discussing another case. Bo mine mi Rabbi Asi, the Esther of Asi, the following question. Hani yahine shaliki d'armai mai. What's the halacha regarding cooked dates of aramai? Again, idolaters, Arameans. What if they went and cooked some dates? What's the status of those dates? Now, they clarified, chulye loti boilach. There is no halacha question here about sweet dates that they cook, the vadai sharu. Because being that the sweet dates are edible even in a raw state, therefore the cooking of an idolater is inconsequential. And so clearly the sweet dates would not be bishalakim, would not be prohibited. On the other hand, mariri loti bailach, you also don't have a question. There's no question here about the very bitter kind of dates, the vadai asiri. For those certainly would be prohibited. It is a problem of bishalakim because nobody would eat those raw. You have to cook those. So the cooking was important, it was integral, and therefore it's a problem of bishalakim. Kiti bailach mitziyoi. Question you could have here is regarding dates that are somewhere in the middle. They're not too sweet, not too bitter. But the point is that one would not normally eat these in a raw state. But like, let's say if somebody's really hungry, he might be able to eat them. So the question is, what would be the halacha if an idolater went and cooked these kind of dates, would they become prohibited under bishalakum? Amar lahu, Rabbi Yossi said back to them, "Mighty boilachu." Why do you even ask this? The Rebbe, also Rebbe, prohibited the dates, said it is bishalakum manu. And who is Rabbi Yossi referring to here when he says the title Rebbe? He's referring to Levi. So Levi said that the answer is they're prohibited. It's considered bishalakum because one would only eat them raw, only if he was very desperate. The Gemara now discusses shisisa. What about some shisisa that was cooked by an idolater? Shisisa is made from flour taken from the flour of parched kernels, and sometimes they would use parched lentils, as we will see. So what is the halacha if an Avi Kochavim prepared this? The Gemara brings a dispute. Rav Shari, Rav says it's permitted, but Avuah d'Shmuel v'Levi Asri. Shmuel's father and Levi said it's prohibited. Gemara clarifies that b'chiti v'sari, if the shisiso is made from wheat or barley kernels, you parched in the oven, you took the flour from that, kuli amalo pligi d'shari. In that case, everybody would agree that it's permitted, even though it was prepared by an idolater, because there's simply no issue. Gemara says further, b'tlafchei d'chala, and in a case where the shisiso is made from the lentil flour, and we know that vinegar was added to it, well then kuli amalo pligi d'yasir. In that case, everyone agrees that it's prohibited because you have an idolater added his vinegar to the dish, which comes from his wine, so that's, of course, prohibited. So there's no argument in that case either. Ki pligi. In what case is there a dispute? B'tlafchid maya. Arguing about the halacha, let's say you have some shisisa of lentils, but he didn't add vinegar in this case. He used water instead. And what is the dispute here? So the Gemara explains, Mar sovar gozrinan ha tu ha. Father of Shmuel and Levi are of the opinion that even though technically in this case it should be fine, but we make a gzerah lest one confuse this case with the case where vinegar was added, where you have a real problem. Whereas in Marasar v'logazrinan, Ravels, we don't make such a decree, therefore as long as it wasn't made with vinegar, we know it was made with water, then it's fine. The Gemara says, v'yekid the army, those that say different version. They're really b'tlavchi d'maya kuliyamalo pligi d'yasir. In this version, everybody agrees that the shisisa, it's made from the lentil flour, is definitely a problem, even if In this particular case, he didn't add water, since very often vinegar is added. Everybody agrees that we have to prohibit any kind of lentil shisisa, whether it actually was used with vinegar or not. And that's not the dispute in this version. Ki pligi, rather, what case do they argue? V'chiti v'sari. Arguing about the halacha where the shisisa was made from wheat or barley, you know, those parched kernels, and they took the flour from that and made it into shisisa. It was prepared by this idolater. What is the halacha here? So in this case, we have a dispute. Mar sovar gazrin and ha tu ha, where the father of Shmuel and Levi of the opinion that we prohibit even this case, even where it wasn't made from lentils at all, as a decree. Maybe if we think, you know, one kind of shisisa is permitted, we'll permit the other kind. It might confuse the halacha. Whereas Rav is of the opinion we don't make such a decree. The Gemara mentions Amar Rav. Rav said that actually trei minei shisisa shadar barzilai agiladi ledavid. Both of the types of shisisa that we've been discussing were sent by Barzilai Giladi to David and his men when they were fleeing the rebellion of Avshalom. The Chsiv, as the Pasuk relates, it talks about the things that Barzilai sent to David. It says, Mishka v'sapos v'chliyotzer v'chitim v'sa'orim v'kemach v'kali v'fol v'adashim v'kali. So it mentions the parched kernels twice. One nearby the words wheat and barley. Another one nearby lentils, that is, that both types were sent, the wheat and barley type, and the lentil type of shisisa, this dish from the parched kernels. The Gemara then notes the halacha nowadays, as of the time of the Gemara, and that is, the Gemara says, V'hashta hudika mafki tzani tzani l'shuki d'narda. Nowadays we find that they bring out baskets and baskets of this shisisa, even though it was prepared by idolaters, they bring it out to the shuk in Arda, and meaning v'les techayish la davu the Shmuel v'Levi. Clearly, the halachic practice nowadays is not concerned with the stringent ruling of the father of Shmuel and Levi. And meaning we're talking about the shisisa made from wheat or barley, not the lentil kind, which is problematic. Again, because it typically vinegar from wine was added to that by idolaters, so that of course would be an issue. Mishnah also mentioned ukvashin shadarkan laseis besochan yayin, preserved foods where it's typical to put wine and vinegar in there. Those kinds of preserves of idolaters are going to be prohibited, of course, due to the content of wine and vinegar. The Gemara explains about the Mishnah's ruling. Amar Chizki said lo shonu ela shadarkan. The Mishnah's ruling that these foods that are preserved, which it's typical to add wine or vinegar in there, and the Mishnah states they're usur for consumption. You can't eat it, but the Mishnah does not take it a step further and say that it's actually prohibited from any kind of benefit. Well, that, you know, lenient aspect of the Mishnah's ruling is only where our basis to be stringent is simply the fact that it's, you know, normal to put wine in these kinds of preserved foods. It says Chizki, the Avol biyadua, but in a case where we know for a fact that the wine or vinegar was added to the preserved food in question, well then, asra filabana, then the whole thing is prohibited for any kind of benefit. For now we know that there's yai nesach in there, and of course yai nesach is prohibited from any benefit, not just from eating it. So again, if it's known that there's yai nesach in there, then the whole thing is going to be prohibited from any benefit. The Gemara questions this distinction. The Gemara asks, umayshnami muryas, why in this regard should the preserved foods be different than the case of muryas, food that's made from fish, where it's basically a given that wine is added? So essentially, this is, you know, considered a case where we know there's wine in there, we know the idolater prepared this, added some wine, and yet the Shoru Rabbanan ba'ana, the Rabbanan, the Mishnah, as opposed to Rabbi Meir, the Rabbanan said it's prohibited from consumption, you can't eat it, but other benefit is permitted. So that seems to contradict what Chizki is saying here, that, you know, where we know there's wine mixed in there, the whole mixture takes on that status of yainesach that's prohibited from any benefit. The Gemara answers with the distinction that hasam lavuri zuama. There in the case of the muryas, the wine is added, why? Only to counteract the strong smell of the fish that's present in the muryas. Whereas hachal imutuki taima, as opposed to, we're talking about these preserved foods, the wine is added to make it taste better. And so that makes it more of a problem. And if the wine is added to counteract something else, you could argue that, you know, the taste of the wine here isn't really, you know, part of the food, doesn't really define the food halachically. And so fine, in that case, the Rabbanan say it remains permitted, at least for benefit, but by the foods that are preserved, where the wine is there to contribute to add a positive taste, So in that case, Chassid says, the halacha is, if we know the wine's in there, the whole thing's going to be totally prohibited from any benefit. However, Rabbi Yochanan now argues with Chizkiya. Rabbi Yochanan amar, afilu biyadua nami mutter. Rabbi Yochanan says that it doesn't make a difference. Rather, even if we know for a fact that wine was added to this food that's been preserved, halacha is the same. That is, that it is prohibited from eating, but you could have other benefit. So on Rabbi Yochanan, the Gemara wonders, the question is, so why in this regard is it different than the case of Murias, where Rabbi Meir said, since we know wine is added to Murias, therefore it's totally prohibited from any kind of benefit. So this appears to be not like Rabbi Yochanan. Continuing with the Lamed Tesem and Aleph, the Gemara answers, there's a distinction here, which is Hosam Yediyah Mamasho. In the case of Murias, Rimeir is stringent because the substance of that not kosher wine is added to the Murias is present in the Murias in a significant way. For the not kosher wine is mixed into the Murias, and the person eats the Murias. He's eating the Ainesach along with the rest of the Murias. So like the Ainesach itself, it's going inside of the food that he's eating. So that's where Meir takes a stringent stance. He says, even though technically it's mixed in, you can't really discern the taste so well, but the fact is the wine itself is mixed in there, so it's prohibited from any benefit. Whereas Hacha lo yediya mamashan, you're talking about these foods that are preserved, and you know, part of the brine, the sauce, the liquid that's used to preserve the foods includes the wine. Well, here, he's not drinking the liquid that's used to preserve the foods. Rather, you're talking about a problematic flavor. So that doesn't have as much halachic substance as the problem with the Murias. And that's where Rabbi Yochanan says, you know, even if we know that the Ainesach was added to be part of the liquid to preserve this food, it's not going to actually make that food, you know, totally prohibited on the same level as the Ainesach itself, where it's forbidden from any kind of benefit.
You've been listening to RealClearDaf.com. Visit us online for resources or to dedicate a shiur. To speak with Rabbi Wise, call 855-ASK-RCD1. That's 855-275-7231.